Good evening, and thank you guys for tuning in tonight to cityofangelsradio.com/saving. My name's Bernadette, and this is our third edition of Saving Lives. I have Art here doing all the controls.
Hello, how are you this evening?
And we have our special guest, Kev, here.
How's everyone doing out there? I'm excited to be here.
Thank you for coming, too. This is awesome. I know for tonight, I was all, like, critiquing the last couple shows, and being able to drive up here with you and kind of getting a little like pep talk with each other with how the show's going to go, which is going to be awesome because we're here, you know. And I want to start off by asking, what do you do now that you are in recovery?
Well, it's a great question. First off, like I said, excited to be here. I think this is just an awesome thing because I know the stigma of addiction is out there, and it's something that a lot of us in recovery are doing a lot to try to break that stigma. And I think this is an excellent resource for those who are still suffering from this terrible disease.
And what's crazy is like the stigma. Like, what defines the stigma? Because I know for me, I thought it was something completely different.
I know, and listening, like you said, to the podcast from last week on the way up here, you guys had discussed what that stereotypical addict looks like to you and what you thought it was before entering the world of recovery. And I had the same type of ideals. I mean, I saw someone on the street. I saw someone with a broken family, with not a lot of material possessions, with like a homeless, tired,
with nothing, basically
distraught, right? Kind of that derelict of society. And it's not like that. Being in recovery for a few years has allowed me to see that this disease affects all of us. Like you had mentioned previously, it affects the families, it affects those who suffer, it affects everyone around us. And really, being in recovery has kind of shown me that. I mean, so many people over my time in the rooms, it's always my brother, my sister, my daughter, myself. I'm affected by this disease, and it's great to get the word out. It's great to be in a situation like this, to be on the other side of things, to be sitting here behind a microphone.
Mm-hmm. And we don't realize who it affects at all when we're in the heat of it. You know what I mean?
It affects everyone.
Mm-hmm. Inside and out. And I know with like you being here, like you don't realize how much I appreciate it, because I find it hard to find people to commit to something like this because obviously of fear. But like, why do we cower at the thought of revealing our true selves?
No, it is. It's a little scary. And I'm not sure why. Like you said, I'm not sure why. I'm proud of what I came from, of where I am now, of the change that's occurred in my life. And I'm proud to have people in my life like you, Bern, who are willing to take that next step and always thinking of others.
Thank you.
And running, and you are like a resource and an outlet like this for those who still suffer. Because I know a lot of days that I spent alone thinking there was never another way, and to have found that life, it's a blessing.
Mm-hmm. And it's amazing too, because like I get to spend a lot of time with you, which is awesome. Like I consider you part of my like, you know, recovery network, and I see you a couple times a week, if not at least once a week. And you know, we have those talks, like, you know, we can tell each other everything, and there's no judgment, and then we can help each other out through things too.
That's what's awesome about it.
Mm-hmm. Is your mic on?
Yep.
I just want to make sure. I don't know, my mic's having some issues today. But yeah, that is what's awesome about it. And it's like, what do they say? The broader the base, the higher the point of freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember coming in, and it was so big for me to see a couple guys that I grew up with, that I used with, found myself in the grips of addiction with, and I was able to see the change in their lives, and that gave me a lot of hope that there was another way out there. And to be able to kind of grow with them and, like you said, build a base, build a broader network. So many people in our situation, it's not even a situation, so many people in our circumstance that we're lost for a time to come in and be able to share these things together and kind of share in this process together. It's an unbelievable
thing. I know for me, like, I didn't know what that meant, that saying, the broader the base, the higher the point of freedom. And someone actually had to explain it to me, like, look at a triangle, you know, you have, is it the right saying, the triangle kind of thing? Mm-hmm. So you have, like, all these people at the bottom from everywhere, from all locations, from all walk of life, from different states. And we have, like, people in recovery where we can go visit California and know people that are there listening and that will be able to help us out. Do you have a better definition on it?
No, I mean, you said it perfectly. And just when you started off that last statement, you said, like, I didn't really know until I experienced it. And I think that's such a huge thing in recovery. So many things I never could have imagined, but, like, I had to experience them firsthand. And I had to learn for myself. And like you said, the network that we have is unbelievable.
And the willingness to actually participate.
Yeah, and it's recovery is a global thing now. It's a global process all over the world. And I mean, the numbers are infinite, how many lives that it's helped and will help and continue to change lives. And it's great to have people like you guys that are constantly willing to lend that hand and be there. Because like I said, being in the grips of addiction, I didn't always know that hand was there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Didn't know there was stuff like this or people like me. Like, I always felt like an outsider. Mm-hmm. And I could be a chameleon at any time. And I could fit in whatever group whenever I wanted. And the only thing I was striving for was, like, people to like me for whatever reason, because I didn't like myself. I couldn't look in the mirror at myself and, like, be okay with what I saw. It was like a shell of a person at times, especially when I was in you know, the grips of it. And, you know, there was times I would deny it, and I, you know, I don't have a problem or an issue, and I always play the blame game. But being able to look in the mirror today at what my life's become and how awesome it is, like, we're sitting here right now, and I'm, like, fiddling my microphone. If that was the worst, you know what the worst problem of my day was today? When I had to go to the bathroom, and there was no toilet paper in the bathroom. You know, you have to do the waddle to, like, the other, you know, room where the toilet paper is. Like, that was my worst problem. And it's happened before, and it tends to happen every couple months. But that was my biggest problem today.
No, you're so right. Like, doing it's the unbelievable. Waddle. And I know we're
from the ground.
That was the biggest problem you had today, great. But you had an awesome day.
Exactly. Awesome day. Literally, I'm picturing myself, like, waddling with them. Oh my god.
No, it's little things in life like that like we can laugh about today, because like I don't really laugh about too many things.
That belly laugh.
Yeah, and it's great. I don't have problems like I used to on a daily basis today. I have a lot of great things in my life. Like, my biggest problem is getting up 10 minutes earlier so I can iron my clothes before work. Like, I can never hold a job before. Now I have an opportunity to be successful and things that I want to be successful in a career. I can be a family man. I can do this. And
dude,
those problems offer a lot of gratitude.
Mm, and that's great. It's, to me, I'm like sitting here a little jealous. Like, I don't know how to iron.
Yeah, I mean, needless to say, I learned how to iron in recovery
right.
as well.
See? Because you like have someone hold your hand to kind of teach you how to do it.
And that's what I need. I need sometimes, and I still need that. I mean, every day, it's still a learning process for me. Because I had to learn how to relive my life all over again. And I don't always succeed. We always talk about progress, not perfection. I still have a lot to learn about life, but it's awesome to be in this circumstance where I know every day is a new experience. And, I mean, every day is a learning experience. I really believe that. And you really do. You learn something new every day, and you like begin to like mold your life around these experiences. And it's awesome.
It's amazing. And if anybody wants to chime in, whether you're in recovery, not in recovery, know someone that is in recovery, you can call in to our hotline at 609-241-7103.
Very good.
Thank you. I've been practicing all the signs around me.
Wouldn't be these dozen signs.
I know. I appreciate that, because I've written it down, but still can't memorize my own darn phone number, let alone another one. So back to some of my little notes and jots and stuff. So I wrote down this like big question, and I want you to answer it too, Art. So the question is, if we had total freedom in life, what exactly would we do? Where would we go? How would we behave day to day? And what would we give up? What would give us meaning?
I think doing that.
That's deep. And that's exactly why I wrote it down, because that's exactly how I felt when I wrote it.
No, I mean, I think the same way, and it's unbelievable how much that that perception has changed over time, especially with recovery, especially given a second chance at life and an opportunity to live a life of freedom. I mean, needless to say, we all know what that dream looked like in addiction, and now it's just so different. Like Art had just mentioned, I feel like I'm doing that. Like, I get to wake up every morning to start a new day with my family and my life, with people that I love, with something that I love to do. And I'm happy, man. I can do what I want, and I don't have an over-reliance on a substance like so many years before. And
to get you through the day.
Yeah, it's a blessing.
There's a life so beyond great. Use, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's purpose. There's.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's like, what, life beyond my wildest dreams? Like, sorry, I'm having some issues with
you
this.
You are having some issues.
It's all good.
And I don't have any tissues.
Tissue? I hardly know you. Yeah, but I'm boom.
Talked about that purpose. Like, it was so funny just talking to someone that's, like, recently walked into my life and, like, giving it even more purpose, you know? Like, I want to be successful, but now, like, I want to be successful for someone else because, like, I want to build a future with something.
Aww.
You know? It's just great. It's a great feeling. I never knew if I'd have that when I was sitting there by myself every day. Like, I never knew if I was going to be given an opportunity to, like, live a life, be a father one day, whatever it may be, be successful in my career. I just never knew, you know. I thought, like Art had just mentioned, the life after drugs, and I could have never pictured that because I didn't know how to stop using. Mm-hmm. I could never stop.
I didn't picture a life.
Or even picture a life without that, right? I mean, mm-hmm. the life of sobriety is a hard thing to paint. I mean, I think a lot of people are just scared of it because it's the unknown.
Mm-hmm. You know? And it's like, what do you do? What do you do with your free time? Tell you what, like, I don't have free time to think sometimes because I'm so busy with all these, you know, amazing things, whether it's going to the shore constantly or going on ski trips. And I remember one time on the shore trip, you had like a banged up leg and I forget what I was doing with your crutches, but I remember, like, I don't know. I think kicked it out from under you. But well, he was sitting, but like, that's a relationship we have. Like, we have so much fun. And I know for my life, it was always just like, I'm going to go to that dive bar that's in the town I grew up in every weekend. And it was one of the ones where you can go in before you were even of age. So then when you become of age to legally, like, drink and everything, it was like not even that cool, but you still went. And it wasn't just on the weekend. It was like every day of the week. And like, you live there. It was ridiculous. The car was there the next day. And people that I used to hang out with back in the day, like, sometimes some of them still do that. And I'll run into someone at the store and I'm like, how are you? How's your life? And they're like, oh, you know, it's great. You know, I have kids, I'm married, you know, I'm still going to this place on the weekend. And then they're like, how's your life? I'm like, dude, it's so great. I was just got back from here. I was just there. I was just in Utah. And I just realized, like, my weekend is not the same anymore. It used to be so the same, and like, that's what I had to look forward to. Now I have so much more to look forward to because of recovery in this program,
and because it's full of things to do now.
There's tons of things. Like, we don't realize the beauty in just one day. They say, like, oh, don't worry about the past, you can't change it, and tomorrow you will never see tomorrow. But there's so much beauty in the world that we just totally, like, passes by as we are going out on our daily business. You know, like the little lady that's walking across the street that's being helped by a random stranger. We miss that when we're just on the go, or we have that tunnel vision to just, like, get through the day so tomorrow I could do the next thing. Like, I don't know. I love having options and being able to do this stuff.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like you had talked about, and like we mentioned earlier, like, those perspectives change. And in addiction, I mean, it really is. It's Groundhog's Day over and over. Every day, it's the same goal.
They have movies for that, too, don't they?
They do.
It's like you're repeating the same day.
And it is, and that's what it is. Every day, it's one goal. And I remember you guys were talking about it last week. Like, the one goal to not be sick. And whatever it takes to get to that point. Unfortunately, those are the actions that we take, and it's unbelievable. I remember one of the first people in the treatment facility that I went to for my first time had mentioned doing some of these activities, and one thing in particular on a Friday night, And I remember my first thought is, like, you'll never catch me dead doing that on a Friday night. And now
what a diner.
Yeah, I look forward to that on a Friday night. I look forward to, like, Art, you had mentioned, like, a life without drugs, and I didn't know what that was. And Bern, like you had mentioned, going to the same places, doing the same things. I could never seem to wrap my head around a life outside of that. And now that my life is filled with so many great things, like, I didn't go on a trip for years. But in 2 weeks, like, I'm going out to Denver and I'm going skiing for the week. And it's just things like this. Like, financially, I was never capable. I was never capable of leaving the dependency that I had on dealers or whatever it may be. And you had talked about the freedom that the recovery offers. And it's, I mean, it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. And being able to, like, wake up and, like, know that you helped someone that day. And being able to go to sleep at night knowing that you were an impact in someone's life.
It's like a whole new life, right? I mean, you're absolutely, you're appreciating things you never appreciated before. You're, you know, the give back thing. You know, for a long time, I wanted to volunteer and give my time to something, but I didn't know what that was. And it should be something that means something to you and is close to your heart for it to be satisfying. Heroin walked into my house. You know, it chose me. I did not choose it. And you know, you had to learn how to live with it and deal with it and move on. And
it has to be hard, like, being on the outside looking in and not being able to help.
Well, yeah, really, especially as a parent. I mean, you know, you're looking there. I mean, you know, I don't care if you're 42 years old, you're still my baby.
Right, absolutely.
Or whatever it is. And I see it that way now. When I was your age, I didn't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I see it that way now. And that's your child, and it's always going to be your child, and you want the best and the brightest, and you know, you want everything for them that you never had. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, it was hard to make that adjustment, but you go out, you educate yourself, you know, you try and, you know, do the right thing and follow someone else's path. I mean, you know, we went out and found someone who had a daughter who got arrested, who was using heroin, who, you know, almost identical situations.
Right.
And how did you handle that? And how, you know, can I be your friend?
Right, I know. It's exactly what it's like.
Because it is. It's finding someone. And I think that's probably the part about going to meetings. You know, you're going to find someone that you connect with.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you make that connection, that's invaluable to you in your recovery, you know, because now you have a fellowship to.
And people often ask me, is it safe for you to hang out with people like that, or like you? Is that safe? Is that going to be a trigger?
I think hanging around with someone in recovery is totally different than hanging around with someone who's still using it. You know, 100%. They're down on Kensington Avenue. I mean, I don't suggest you follow that path, but you have to change the things around you, right?
Mm-hmm. They always say, like, people, places, and things, but...
And that's what happens with most, I'm going to say, most of the kids that we have, you know, even that are underage or under the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
They go get treatment, you know, we send them off to another state, they do great for 6 months, and then we come home and we put them in the same exact environment, in the same group of friends,
and then when they relapse,
we're all, oh my God, why did he relapse?
Well, and we're not saying, and they're not saying either, like, get new friends or anything. It's just that there has to be a little bit of a balance.
It's like anything. I mean, my grandmother used to say, and I always, you know, was like, yeah. When you go with someone who limps, by the end of the year, you'll limp. I mean, when you hang around like-minded people, you're going to become like the group of people that you hang out with. We have mob mentality, right, as a natural instinct as people. So,
and that's so true. That's a great point. Like, you always hear that saying, like, show me a person's friends and I'll show you that person. And
100%.
It's incredible how much... Like Art had just mentioned, that mob type mentality. It's incredible how much your surroundings can change an individual's mentality. I know, obviously, dealing in active addiction was around people that partook in the same activities that I was partaking in, and now in a network and in a grouping with people, with positive minded people who are looking to better themselves and better their lives, how much more motivation that gives me on a daily basis to get up and want to be successful and want to be a better me each and every day.
Mm-hmm.
Because I see the people around me doing the same, and right. It's incredible how much,
hope they give.
Yeah. How much hope and how
even doing stuff like this, I know it's scary, like, you know, I'm on camera, like, I'm outing myself, and it is scary, but...
You're out of your comfort zone.
I'm totally out of my comfort zone, but at the same time, it's like, you know, they say there's this big stigma, like, how else can we eliminate the stigma without people that are doing well and that are doing this and living a life without the use of substances? How else are they supposed to see it's not the guy on the corner with a bag in his hand?
I believe going to meetings and things shows you that, one, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to this meeting, there's not two people there or five people there.
Oh, my God, there's...
These are packed rooms, mm-hmm. you know, so you have to really realize I'm not in this alone. And again, you're going to meet that one person that you're going to make that connection with.
But what about for the people, too, that aren't addicts or aren't...
Well, you know what? You go to a meeting. You know, not everybody comes out a believer from going to their first meeting. But, sure. You know, you have to take that first step. You know, I mean, I can't tell you anybody that went to that first meeting without being kicking and screaming, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't think of one. Not one.
I know that when I went to a meeting for the first time, oh, my God, they had me read this paper that I couldn't pronounce the words. And there was about 100 people in this meeting. And I remember, though, even though I did that and I was scared, you know, once again, it was the place where I felt the most comfortable for the first time. Like, how ironic.
But that's good, because once you start to feel comfortable, you're going to be mm-hmm. more involved. Hello, saving lives. Hello. Hey.
No, it's so true. I mean, that comfort zone, it can be so tough to step outside. I remember going to that first meeting. I was...
We have a caller.
When I struggled so much, but I continued to come.
Let me put you on the air. Hold 1 second.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Awesome. What's going on? It's Patty.
Hey, Patty. Thanks for calling. How was your meeting?
My pleasure. It is great. I am driving home from a meeting right now, meditation meeting over at the home group.
Oh, we love you.
call in and checked in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're so happy you did.
It's going great so far. We're kind of talking about how... Can you hear us?
I can.
Okay. I said it's going great. We're talking about how amazing recovery is, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a perfect word to describe recovery. Amazing. And for me, in terms of, like, I'm still on a daily basis amazed at, like, the gifts that I've received in recovery. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Being able to be a part of, like, you know, your sister's wedding and remembering it.
Yeah.
That's a gift all in itself.
Yeah, completely. You know, even like tonight, there was only four of us in this meeting, meditation meeting, and, you know, got so much out of it, just really felt like I needed to be there, and that, you know, those three other guys and myself, you know, it was amazing, and like, would have never in a million years pictured myself in a room with three other men getting that much out of a conversation with each other, and a you know, a real heart-to-heart, supportive, empathetic mm-hmm. meeting.
And I know when we leave meetings, we tend to be like, it's a whole other high in itself.
Completely. Yeah, it is. It really is.
And Pat, we were just talking about that, how... We could have never imagined that type of support. You know, we walk into a meeting for the first time and we're scared. We can never imagine a different way of life. But we find those people that we connect with and we build that network. And it's amazing. It's amazing to be, like you just mentioned, in a small room and to feel a connection with someone in your similar situation who's been through the things that you've been through. And you come out on the other side, and you come out together, and you learn from each other on how to face life on a daily basis, because that was the toughest thing for me, getting up every morning and having to face life. I could never seem to do that, and that kept me down for a lot of years. But to be able to find those type of groups and the relationship that we all have and the support that we all have, it's like you said, it's an amazing thing and it's a blessing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's told that we have to separate ourselves from people that stunt our vitality, growth, and happiness.
Still with us?
Separate ourselves from what, Bert?
Separate ourselves from those who stunt our vitality, growth, and happiness.
Oh, I love that. Is that yours or is that from the literature?
That's from another book that I read.
I like that a lot. Yeah. I really like that one.
I thought you would.
But it's true. It's true. I think that in recovery, the people I've met and the people I surround myself with allow me and push me to grow. You know, the opposite of stunning, which is what I was doing to myself for all those years in my active addiction. You know, I felt like from a maturity standpoint, I just stopped growing in my active addiction in every way, mentally, spiritually, physically even. Mm-hmm. You know, stunning that kind of potential that I feel like my higher power had for me, and in recovery, I think I was able to uncover and kind of, you know, work towards growing towards you know, bettering myself, and recovery gave me the opportunity to do that on a daily basis, just for a day.
Yeah, and the more that we're true to ourselves, the more we can connect with and contribute to the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I love you, Patty, and thank you so much for calling.
Patrick, thanks, pal.
Of course, of course. Good luck with the rest of the show, and I hope it goes great. I'm going to log in as soon as I get home.
Okay, you're the best. Mwah.
Love you. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
I love Patty.
Ah, he's the best. I know we could count on
him. I'm, like, picturing his, like, gorgeous hair. It was kind of, like, flipping in the wind as he's driving. And, you know, he made great points, too.
He did. He said a lot of great things. And he's one of those guys who obviously we both have such a relationship with, but was able to see him on the other side of things and to see the growth he's made and how he's gone back to school and kind of dedicated his life to helping people in this type of circumstance. That's the kind of passion recovery gives you. Like Art had mentioned earlier, our purpose. And a lot of us learn our purpose once we're able to kind of cross that barrier and step out of active addiction and really get a feel for what we were meant for. And it's a great feeling. I mean, like we had talked about earlier, you kind of have to experience it. It's tough to explain, but once you experience it, you really get the full gist of what it can mean to somebody.
It's like a miracle. Like it really is.
It is. I mean, miracle is really the only way to describe it. And I know if you asked my mother that, she would say just that word. It's a miracle. Because, like, all right, you had talked about being on that parent's end of things, that parent's kind of viewpoint. And you never know. You never know what you're putting your family through in those type of circumstances. But being able to take a step back from the situation, like, a few years later, and to see how our relationships evolved and developed, it's unbelievable. You know, I have a little sister who's my goddaughter, who is 12 years younger than me, who didn't know me when she was a little baby because I was never around and wasn't that older brother that I always had promised I'd be. And now I can be that. And mm-hmm. to watch her, she's graduating mm-hmm. high school this year and on to bigger and better things. And she, it's having those type of relationships, and she inspires me. You know, she inspires me to want to do better.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an unbelievable thing.
And how many? Are you one of three? Or?
I'm one of four.
Oh, nice.
So I got a few that are looking up to me that I need to continue
and you're
to
the
stay
oldest?
On this path. I am.
And this disease really, you know, is a family disease. It's not you by your own. It really affects everyone. I mean, I've seen so many where, you know, the siblings are affected because the parents are giving all their attention to, you know what I mean, the one in need or trying to get them help or trying to get them into treatment or, you know, trying to figure out why they're doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And the other ones suffer in turn and they see that. And they turn to, you know, get a little resentment towards that in the end. And,
absolutely.
And, you know, I plus know. The one with the disease doesn't have the, you know, the time for me. No, you get the hand.
Right. No, you don't have time for anything. Right. I'm actually one of six and my little sister, she's like the, I would say, the rock of the family. And I know that there was times where, like, no matter what, she always believed in me, and she always had faith in me that I would be able to get this. And we actually had got a tattoo together. She got the beginning quote, I got the second quote, and it's some kind of proverb from Ruth. And it's, where you go, I'll go, and where you stay, I'll stay. So the meaning with that behind us is, like, no matter what, like, she's going to be there for me. And now I'm actually able to kind of look at her and be like, I hope I make you proud. Because I know for a long time I didn't. I know I was an embarrassment to my entire family. Like, my father and my brother, they're in the they're officers. And, like, I was an embarrassment. And that's how I felt. And, like, for me, I felt like the biggest option, the only option I had, was to just eliminate myself from the situation.
But that's where the other part of recovery comes. And that's where you make your, you know, when you get to the part where you make your amends.
Absolutely.
If they, you know, allow you to do that, it, you know.
And I know my
that's an important step, I think. I think that helps you know that you've reached that next pinnacle in your recovery. You know what I mean? That people are taking you serious. I'm telling you, you know, 3 years, this past Christmas was the first time I saw my daughter really back.
Right.
You know, as far as appreciating her siblings, remembering people's birthdays and holidays, and you know what I mean? Like, being a part of the family rather than I'm over here doing this. And
yeah, like being there full mentally, spiritually, physically.
Right. And I really saw that. And it doesn't come back right away, but there's hope there. I mean, you know, you're not going to see that in that first year of recovery. And, you know, you might not see it in that second year, but hopefully you'll see it towards the end of that second year. You know what I mean? Where you really start coming back. And
right.
You lose a lot of brain cells, and it really takes, hey, that's a lot of abuse to your body. I mean, you know, heroin's a pretty potent, and it's very hard. But once you can come back, boy, I mean, you just look at people. I mean, I look at you, you know, I look at you. I look at my daughter, and I'm like, wow, like, you know, there was beautiful people there all along, you know.
Thank you.
I called her Reagan in the throes of her addiction.
Yep. Yeah, we were mentioning that. I was like, dude, I love that girl.
Mm-hmm.
And at least now, like, that's not a bad name.
No.
You know,
well,
she was possessed by a demon.
I can laugh about it now. It wasn't very funny at the time.
Right, absolutely not, no.
To be able to go back and look on it, you know. So, I mean, that hope is there that, you know, there's room to come back from this disease. And
like, people like us that struggled before, we have to defeat our inner demons that'll defy our greatness.
And, Brian, you just mentioned a great thing about making an amends and sticking on this path, this journey that we kind of embark on in recovery. And that's the best gift, I feel like, that we make to those people who supported us in our darkest hour. You had talked about making it, that's the biggest amends, and I always think that, like, a living amends to my family. How many people really get an opportunity? So I was 25 when I got clean. At like 25 years old, how many people get an opportunity to, like, really address their life and sit there and make a change for the better?
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of afforded an opportunity here to make the most of, to make a change and be a better person and continue down a life where I can be, like I said, a successful, not only in work and socially, but, like, with my family and be a role model for my brothers and sisters and be someone my parents can count on. And it's
we're just awesome incredible. People.
And you know what? And it's not just your parents. I mean, that really rolls over to, I mean, I think it starts with your family, but it rolls over to, you're going to be a better brother, sister, son, daughter, neighbor, coworker, you know what I mean? Member of the community. There's nothing bad that comes out of that.
There's often times where I feel like everybody needs some kind of program because some people could just be so nasty.
There's 80 million Americans addicted to something.
Yep.
Whether it's a substance, the internet, sex, smoking cigarettes, something. And it's because as a society, we have addictive behaviors. I mean, no matter what that is, the question is to try and pick one that's not so harmful to you.
Yeah, for most people, I feel like it's like their phone. It's like you're constantly in
your phone. Your phone's like that is definitely an addiction.
You can't go to the bathroom without your phone.
People can't do anything. I mean, they don't even look up anymore. They
And we lose that direct contact. Like, I know, like, we're big huggers, right? And at first, I didn't like the hugging. It was weird. It was, like, very uncomfortable. And now I'll hug a person when I just meet them. And I love it. I'm like, oh, well, I'm just a hugger or whatever. Like, it's because you don't know what somebody's going through that day. And
we have a lot of hugging in the recovery community.
Yeah.
Not so much in public, but.
But see, that's where I extend it. It's like, I'll meet some lady. I'm like, you know what? Let's just hug. But
you
I'm
don't
a girl,
see
so
that in
the
workplace. You don't walk into your job and hug your coworker. I mean, some people do, but the majority not.
But like you had said, in recovery, it gives you that sense of belonging. It gives you that sense of
camaraderie.
Yeah,
and fellowship.
Your shoes,
right?
And you've been in mine, and we're gonna work through this together. And it's very
loving.
Yeah, it's loving. It puts your mind at ease to know. And we had mentioned it already. You always feel like you're by yourself in the battle, and to know that there are other people that were there, that are there, and you're being welcomed home and welcomed in. That's a big thing for someone suffering.
Right. I know in my mind it was like, you ever watch those movies or those shows where the person's kind of like standing still and all the lights are flashing by, everything else is going by, fast forward right in front of their eyes. That was my life when I was in active addiction. That was my life. And there's times where...
And that's because everything is flying by you, because you can't really focus on anything.
Right.
So it just seems like it's flying by.
Either,
right?
Because you decide not to show up for it.
Right.
It's continuing. It's always going to continue. And if you guys have some insight on that, feel free to call in at 609-241-7103.
And you're listening to City of Angels Recovery Radio. If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, you know, you can reach out to our City of Angels hotline. That number is 609-910-4942. There's someone there 24 hours a day. So if you feel the need to speak with someone, reach out.
Mm-hmm. And like letting go negative thoughts, letting go of bad actions, trying to like turn, I know, like turning my perspective over is what I had to do like most of the days. Like today, I have not drank a Red Bull today.
It's probably a good thing.
It's been a long time since I can say that. And I literally had to post on Facebook. I did it like 9 times because 9's like my number. And I posted it 9 times and I typed it out. I will not drink a Red Bull today. I will not drink a Red Bull today. And when I got the thought like, oh, I got to go buy one. I'm going to go to the store. I will just leave my house to go buy one. I did not. And like, so now it's what? 8:38, and I did not drink Red Bull today, and I don't plan on drinking one like after this. So those are how I had to get through my days.
This is my last Dunkin' of the day.
I chugged coffee on the way before we got here, but hey, I'm working on it.
Yeah, progress, not perfection.
Mm-hmm. So what are your plans for I know that you work in insurance, and I know that you have some other goals down the road in mind. Care to elaborate?
Yeah, sure. I mean, like I said, recovery is giving me an opportunity to kind of restart my career. I'm getting a little bit of a late start.
How? You're like 20-something.
I'd been very fortunate that I was kind of able to scrape together a college degree before my addiction really took hold of my life. I was always a good student and always worked hard and went drugs and eventually... Addiction overcame my life and kind of sucked me down. I was lucky enough to have a degree, and I came out. And like we had talked about before, being a chameleon, I was always good at showing up to work and shaking someone's hand and looking them in the eye and telling them I was going to bust my ass for them. But when it came down to it, drugs what mattered most. And if I had to leave and take a 3-hour lunch to go get my fix, and that's what it was going to be, I couldn't stick by any of my commitments. And my career suffered because of it. And it's humbling. It's humbling. I had to take a few years off. I had worked some lower-level jobs to kind of get back on my feet, and was lucky enough to get in somewhere and get in a second chance at a career, and have to restart and start over in some ways. But at the same time... I mean, the future's bright. That's another huge principle that recovery's taught me. By sticking down this path and continuing down this journey, there's nothing in my way anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, drugs were always in the way. And
completely unstoppable. And, like, the sky's the limit.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been in recovery now?
So I just had 900 days.
Nice. Congratulations.
About 2.5 years.
Nice. Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Going on like 30 years wise.
What was your drug of choice?
It was heroin and cocaine. Yep. make some
music. Right. Now. Yeah. Party time.
But it didn't start like that.
No, it didn't. And we were talking about that, like, on the way up here. Talking about the stigma. And yeah, and it started with prescription medication. Never prescribed.
Right. That led right.
But yeah, I mean, I remember coming back early in college. And obviously, I was partaking in drugs on a Friday night. But really coming back that summer, my first summer home from college and prescription medication. I'm from Delaware County, Pennsylvania.
Oh, why not? What was the number on the doctors that prescribed last year opiates?
It said we were looking at it on the way up here. It said over 240 million prescriptions for opiate drugs, medication, whatever it may be, opiate given medications were given out last year. And that's how the kind of problem, the problem swept through our area, Burn. You're very familiar with it, mm-hmm. and it kind of hit it like a wave. Like, I came home and had never heard of Percocet and this and that, and then everybody was doing it. And needless to say, as an attempt to always fit in and to be the center of attention, and I craved that so very much that, needless to say, it wasn't long before I did it. And doing it that first time, I mean, it really is. It sounds so cliche to say it, but I knew I had arrived once I did it that first time. And it wasn't a day that went by for years after that I didn't do it every single day and do everything in my power to get mm-hmm. it. It's crazy to look back on it now.
Right.
But it wasn't really so much to get high. It was really to prevent from getting sick, right? Mm-hmm.
And so. I couldn't agree more. Like, those first couple days, I remember thinking how unbelievable this feeling was. And I hate to glorify in any way like that. But, I mean, that's what drugs do when you at first. And what's that take? A few short weeks, and you start to feel those withdrawal symptoms, and then it's years of scratching and clawing to not get sick. And unfortunately, that takes you to deeper and deeper depths, and you go further and further. I started off with prescription drugs and ended up with a needle in my arm in an abandoned house in areas that I never thought I'd go or never thought I'd be found. And it was a scary thing, especially looking back on it. But it's so crazy. The drugs had overtaken me so much that I was never scared. I was always willing to take that next step to get another one.
And you want to talk about stigma. Like, I don't look at you and could ever picture you being in, like, an abandoned building with a needle in your arm. I could never picture that.
It's amazing the things you'll do, isn't it?
Right.
It really is.
I feel a little lucky that I didn't get to that point, but I know if I don't continue to do what I do, that it would always get to that point. All the nevers will come true.
And that's why I think it's so important to do what we do, and that's tell our stories and share that with others, because if we touched one person tonight and they seek recovery from this, you know what I mean? That's great. I mean, we've really accomplished something.
I know mine started out with a bad car accident that was prescribed for many years. And then it was like a surgery and another surgery and another surgery. And literally for a good 10 years, I was prescribed opiates daily. And then, you know, you start off this low milligram. And then within a year, you get the milligram goes higher and then it gets higher. And then you're at the max milligrams and you're kind of like, what? What do you mean?
No one woke up and said, hey, I'm going to be an addict today.
Never.
I can't even wrap my mind around somebody saying that.
That's why I love that new song with I can't even pronounce his name.
Macklemore.
My drug dealer was a doctor. Yeah. And, like, not for nothing. Like, I want to say, I like to hope and think that, like, they're not trying to do, it's not, like, their fault, but, like, sometimes I want to be like, it's their fault, because, you know, I always wanted to play the blame game.
Right, but I think that's another reason why sessions like this are so important.
to educate everyone,
whether it be a doctor, a patient who is prescribed, to educate everyone on the dangers of prescription medication mm-hmm. and opiate
there
abuse.
There should be a protocol.
Right, exactly.
Not and just one to two, four times a day. No, protocol. Day one, whatever the amount is. And then, like, it gets, you know, weaned for a certain amount of time. Or whatever.
We're in the grips of an epidemic. It's not just a problem. It's an epidemic. I mean, it is affecting every walk of life from every piece of society. You don't have to be poor, you're middle class, rich. I mean, it just doesn't matter.
And it's always been going on. Like, this has always been a problem, but it's more so coming to light because of how it's also affecting maybe not just the lower end on the totem pole.
Well, you know, it still comes back to it. It's more than, you know, it's not a choice, okay? It's a disease.
Right.
And that disease needs...
When I see people, like, arguing online and them saying, oh, those junkies. I'm like,
that's because those people are ignorant and don't really... haven't taken the time to educate themselves.
Let me give them a piece of me.
You know, and hopefully it'll never walk into their house and affect their lives, because I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Not for a minute.
I would have told you 3 years ago that I would have never thought that we'd be sitting here I would be this involved as far as I am, you know, in fighting this epidemic.
And that you're helping so many people, so many parents, so many loved ones that experience, you know, their loved one in the heat of their addiction. Like, you help so many people.
What do you do when, you know, addiction walks into your house and you discover it for the first time? You know, we want to live that white picket fence life, and that doesn't happen to me, and that's somebody else's problem. And
it's under the rug.
That's not the case right now. I mean, there's... I can't think of how many kids we lost in Hamilton Township in just the last 2 years, you know what I mean, alone. And our government there, you know, we lost one kid to a Zika. They had press conferences and task force and everything else. You know, we've lost well over... Well, actually, last year we lost 1,600 kids in the state of New Jersey from overdoses.
In Philadelphia, it was over 1,000 that died of an overdose. In PA, it was
over 3,800.
Yeah, 3,800
in the last year.
I mean,
that's crazy.
That's more than die in car accidents or from cancer, smoking cigarettes combined.
Mm-hmm. That's like,
where's the press conference on the overdoses in my township? Is what I wanted to know.
Why don't people talk about it? Because it's not my child. Oh, no. No, we need to talk about it, because we need to raise the awareness that there is options, is a way out, and there's help.
Well, we need so much for awareness, but we're past awareness at this point. We need recovery resources. We need recovery centers. We need more recovery coaches.
We need people talking about recovery a little bit more.
We need instant resources, so when someone calls our hotline and says, hey, I'm ready to go into recovery, I can't do this anymore, mm-hmm, I don't have to wait 10 days, you know, to place them into a detox.
Oh, wait. So I remember, so the 10 days thing. So I just found out that if you call a treatment center because you need to get in and they don't have a bed available, that if you are able to detox at home or detox yourself for like a few days, say like a week later, guess what? You're not eligible to get into treatment anymore.
It literally, you have to test positive.
That is absurd. That is bull.
It's
okay,
insane.
So I need help. So you don't have room, but what do I do now?
Well, see, a lot of what we do is, you know, when we get a call from somebody and they're like, hey, I want to get off the streets, you know, we'll fetch them, we'll put them in a hotel, we'll feed them, we'll get them to the doctor. If they don't have insurance, the way the system is, you know, you have to play the system. Mm-hmm. That could take us anywhere from 3 days to 13 days to get them accepted somewhere. So what do you do in the meantime? You know, when someone's dope sick, they're dope sick right now. They want to feel better now, not 13 days from now.
Well, you get them to a meeting.
Well, we take them to our doctor, and, you know, that's where, now this is where medically assisted treatment comes in.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can get them to the doctor, you can get them a physical, you can see what they're physically like, and we can get them on a Suboxone program temporarily until they can get into detox and get into a program and get weaned down to nothing, you know, and go about entering the world of recovery and meetings and working every day at staying sober.
Right.
It's not an easy job.
And Art, I think that's unbelievable that you guys are involved in that, in this process, to offer, like you said, those resources, because I can't tell you how many times you hear of a mother talking about their child or a husband talking about their wife or whatever the situation may be. It's always like, I'll go to treatment tomorrow. I'll go to treatment tomorrow. And they end up not making it
to
the next day.
Those are famous last words that we constantly hear. And you're right. It's that, I'm going to go get high one more time. And it's usually that
That's
one
when
more
they
time,
usually die. If you guys want to call in, we have about like 10 more minutes left of our show. It's
609-241-7103.
He's got a nice rhythm to it. He really does. I'll get there. You know, it's just a little bit of practice that I need.
But it is saving lives. And it's when someone's ready to get that help. We don't know when that's going to be, whether it's today or tomorrow, which is why we're always there for them. Mm-hmm. You know, my job isn't to talk you into going into anything. My job is to go, what can I do for your recovery today? Pretty much simple. Right. You know, my job is to remove your barriers into getting into recovery.
Mm-hmm. That's an unbelievable like mindset to have too, because I feel like so often, I don't want to say it's more so those personally connected to us get so scared and try to force recovery on us. And like you said, an addict won't seek recovery until they're ready. But at the same time, to have resources like your program, to be involved in that type of thing, I mean, I always love that saying. It's a little corny, but like you change one life, you change the world, and you never know what saving one person can do. And I feel like if a lot of us, and even more of us, whether it be in recovery or any other walk of life, takes on that mindset a little bit, you know, it's only gonna lend positive results.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unbelievable what you guys are doing, and it's greatly appreciated in the recovery community. I know that because we know firsthand how vital and important these types of organizations are, because without someone reaching out a hand to me, I wouldn't be sitting in this seat today.
Mm-hmm. That's it. And the same thing you had, you know, Angels in Motion here last week.
Yep.
You know, I mean, they do the same thing. They're moms. They give out sandwiches. They give out socks. They give out hope, you know. So when they're ready, they know there's somebody there,
mm-hmm.
you know, waiting to help them in the wings. Mm-hmm. It just has to be when they're ready.
And that's so important. I mean, not to get too personal, but I remember my last day using, and I needed someone to call because I had no other way out. And whoever it was that I called, they picked up on the other end, and they brought me to a treatment center that night, right then and there. I wasn't close to this person. Personally, I was close, but geographically wasn't close to this person. They came and got me, and they got me into treatment, and that was the last time I ever used. And like you just mentioned, Byron, like that memory's stricken in my head. I try to not remember it every day in a negative sense, but it's important to remember where I came from and mm-hmm. the steps that I'm making every day and that we're all making to continuously better ourselves. But it's always important to remember where we came from, because I don't ever want to go back there.
Right. And that pain is like unlike no other pain I've ever felt, with having all these surgeries, with being in a bunch of accidents, like the pain of defeat. The pain of, I thought surrender was me giving into like the disease, but when I had to actually surrender to the fact that I was like in trouble and I needed help, I remember my last day too. And like, I can't forget that last day. I can't forget that, because it'll just, if I do, I'll forget that I'm an addict. I'll forget that I need recovery, and I'll forget that I need the people in my life that I have in order to help me get another day.
See, and it's a hard battle, you know, for you both are so young, yet in the back of your mind, you have to keep, you know what I mean? That in the back of your mind all the time, that one little thing could trigger you into, you know, you have to want recovery bad enough and to never go back to that, mm-hmm. to really, you know, work your program hard.
And how do we not go back to that? We continue to go day by day, and like if we have that random thought, because we're human and like we have thoughts, we just don't act upon it. And feelings aren't facts,
and you need someone to reach out to, you know, at that point in time. I mean, you know, when you feel that you're at the end of that rope and you're just going to go out, that's when you really need to reach out to your sponsor, or you know, someone close to you, or someone that you trust, or someone that you could talk to.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what? I thought a sponsor.
We're a recovery coach. I mean, right. No, I got a call from a mother as a recovery coach today, and it's her son who's in his 30s. And he didn't call me. She called me, and I said, well, you know, he's got to call me. Here's my phone number. Here's my email address.
I thought a sponsor was someone that would help me pay the bills I owed. Like, that's what I thought a sponsor was. Because in my eyes, a sponsor, like, you see the t-shirts, you see that people have, like, the, I don't know, the words on the back of it. That's what I thought a sponsor was. Like, the absurd thinking when you don't know any better.
This is true.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary that you don't know. But like you had mentioned, once we start coming around and get to realize that these other people, no matter what the walk of life, they've kind of been in our shoes, and having that support. Or like you mentioned, there needs to be someone there that you can pick up the phone to. And whether it's a hotline like you guys offer, or it's a family member, a member of your support network, whether in the rooms, outside the rooms, you need to pick up the phone and make that call, because like you had said, it always seems like that last one. I wanted to get one more.
We're
all invincible, right?
Yeah. Do you split in what you do? Do they call it a sponsor too?
I'm a recovery coach.
Right.
Okay.
But if a parent,
which is totally different than a sponsor. Mm-hmm. Okay. A sponsor is going to help you work your program.
Right.
A recovery coach is there to remove any barriers for you to enter into recovery at any point in time.
Now, what about dealing with the parents?
Sometimes the parents are the barrier.
Very true.
And they need to be removed. And sometimes when if I'm meeting with a parent and a child, or it might be a young adult, it might be somebody over the age of 18,
mm-hmm.
Either or, if you don't feel that person is comfortable enough to talk to you, then you need to remove the barriers to get them comfortable to talk to you. I'm not there to talk or convince you or put you anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there to go, so how's that working out for you?
And what are you going to do about it now?
You know, and it's a matter of asking questions and making you realize on your own where you're at. So tell me about yourself. When was the last time you used? 20 minutes ago? You know, are you working? No, I lost my job. Car? No, I don't have a car. So how's that working out for you? You know, and you put that back on them to let them think.
Very,
you know?
Very similar story, or it's a very similar conversation, unfortunately, because we all find ourselves in the same circumstance, which also allows us to kind of build that bond on the other side of things. Once we're finally able to reach the world of recovery, we've all been in those circumstances, and we see how far each of us can kind of climb out.
And we have like the best of friends too.
And simply as a recovery coach, it's what can I do for your recovery today?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to talk you into anything. You have a question about something? Do you have an interest in a program?
I love that, the recovery coach. It's like awesome. Isn't your grand sponsor a recovery coach?
I think he is. I know
great grand,
right? He's involved
in a different town, in different areas.
Well, see, recovery coaches were, you know, it takes 2 years to get your CDC to become a guidance, you know, a counselor, mm-hmm. or that type. We're in an epidemic. We need more boots on the ground right now. So the recovery coach is a week-long class that you can take. If you want to be certified through the state of New Jersey, that, you know, it's required to take that class. As a matter of fact, we have a class tonight.
Oh, nice.
And I'm going down to teach tomorrow night, and that's the last night.
Did you have a class before this?
Actually, it's all week long. It started Sunday night.
Right, that's right.
It started Sunday during the day, and it goes right straight through all week long.
Mm-hmm.
But that gives you the skills to become a recovery coach and work. And, you know, then some of us sit in the, you know, we're in the office on different days, and they have the opportunity to come in and put their volunteer hours in and get some recovery coach experience, you know, and the requirements that are fit there, and see how we talk to people, how we talk to families, how do we talk to someone seeking recovery, you know, and they can learn that way.
I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. It's unbelievable, and it's a terrific resource for those in the area.
Absolutely.
Well, we are running out of time.
I was just going to say, I know we're about time's up. So thank you guys for listening to our third show for tonight. I'd like to thank Art for doing all the mechanical stuff.
Well,
he's amazing.
You.
There wouldn't be a show without him. I want to thank Kev for being here.
I enjoyed it greatly. I hope to be back sometime.
Absolutely, anytime. And we're over and out. Oh, wait. We're not over and out yet, because I forgot to do my little quote. We must finally become serious about the fact that our days will become weeks. weeks will become months, and months will become years, and decades and a lifetime, either won or lost, joyful or regretful, purposeful or squandered, and it's your decision.
Threaded together.